This is part two of the interview with Brandon Hunt. So you just talked about recruitment of agents from outside the company. You can monitor what they're doing with this broker metrics program through the MLS. Is that correct?
It's not actually through the MLS. It's farmed out to another company. And if you Google broker metrics, you can come up with the company's name. I just don't have it on the top of my head here. But essentially, yeah, what they do is they feed off the MLS data, and they take this data into different reports that you can run.
Let's get back to the leads coming in. You're going to give these out to some of the agents in the office. Do you just hand the lead to them and hope that they're going to track these leads and this information in the future? Or do you have some kind of centralized database that you're managing and maintaining these leads?
Yes, we do have a CRM, a customer relationship management software, that we do plug these leads into. That once we get the lead, it feeds into an online form that essentially goes into a email marketing campaign. And based on the criteria that lead came in, say they are looking in the city of Phoenix, Arizona, well, the information that would be on a drip email system is based off the Phoenix area and what they might be looking for as a buyer. So they might have, here's what a sample real estate contract looks like. Here are the steps of the home buying process. You know, have you got pre-qualified for a loan, and this is what lenders look for. So it's all those kind of email marketing pieces that are geared towards the data that we receive from the initial inquiry that we're able to put into a email marketing system and have it automated. So we're doing follow-up on the agent's behalf, so they're getting hit with useful, good content from us as a real estate brokerage, and also getting the kind of service and attention from the real estate agent, because you know we want to make sure that buyer that's looking to buy in Phoenix has read the buyer's advisory or has been given the link to look for the criminal activity in that neighborhood or that area, which we can't steer them towards, but we can provide the data for them to look at on their own. So it's one way of, you know, covering our liability, and also another way of providing good information and subsidizing the lead follow-up that our agents do.
And at the same time, then, the agent is, I assume, making phone calls that would complement these emails.
Exactly, because they know by the time they get the lead, it's X number of days before they get this email marketing piece, and X number of days so they get the next. So, you know, a typical lead follow-up question can be, you know, did you get that email about, you know, that had the residential purchase contract? I mean, this is what you would have to sign if you're purchasing a home. Did you have any questions on it? You know, typical questions where it's an easy lead follow-up because, you know, it was an email that was automated to them.
How often are you sending emails out to these leads?
We try to hit them every 4 days in a 3-month period because the way we have, you know, developed our online system, trying to get people at the more towards the end of the purchasing and decision-making process, we want to try to really cram that information in a 3-month period. So we figured if we're doing our building online right by targeting the people more in the end of the decision-making process, they should be 3 months out from the time they inquire to us. And that's where we really want to target them and try to get that sale.
This CRM that you're using, is it a proprietary system, or do you know, is it something somebody could purchase off a shelf?
Sure. No, it's really hard to develop any proprietary information nowadays with the rate of technology changing. I mean, I've seen a lot of companies make this mistake of, we're just going to do it ourselves. And then, you know, by 2 years later, by the time they get it implemented, it's already way outdated. So we use a couple different systems that have APIs that feed into each other. For example, we use Wufoo. That's WUFOO.com. Wufoo is an online form filling out where you can upload forms, contracts, data to, And that feeds into MailChimp, which is our drip email campaign system, which is really able to segment this data out into different targeted emails. You know, for example, if on the WooFoo form they filled out that they're a buyer and interested in Phoenix, well, it's going to go into a certain MailChimp email campaign that's geared towards that Phoenix and being a buyer. So those are the type of systems that we use that communicate with each other, that accomplish the goal we want to without being a redundant data entry type of process. It's a one entry, and it's segmented to where it needs to go, and it's cost effective. I mean, I think WooFoo is, you know, it can be anywhere from $10 to $30 a month, and MailChimp is probably about the same. So it's a very cost effective solution out there because they have APIs that communicate with one another.
What's API?
Technically, that what essentially it means is that the applications are compatible. They're releasing. They're more open source to development, which means if I develop this whole system and I release an API for it, well, other people can take that API and use it to enhance their system or tie into their system. So it's almost like an open source code for communication of different online applications. It almost gets into the cloud computing and using different programs that will kind of fit hand in hand with each other and open it up to more development.
So it's a communication method for each of these programs to talk to one another.
Exactly.
You mentioned that your agents need to make phone calls to follow up with these leads. Do you have that put on a schedule? Do they have to make a call every X number of days? You mentioned 4 days on the email. Do the calls have to happen every once in a while?
We have not. We've been a little bit, I guess, more liberal with how we regulate the lead follow-up from our agents on how many, you know, we don't have certain guidelines. They have to email them this many times, or they have to make this many phone calls. It's something that we've been looking into potentially doing to standardize the process maybe a little bit more and have more of a structure. But at this point, we have not implemented that, but it's something I've definitely been considering doing. But again, it goes to, you know, we're able to follow these leads through our brokerage, and we know how many leads have been given to how many agents, to which agents, and how many leads have they closed. So we have the metrics inside our company where we know if we gave Joe, you know, 30 leads last month and, you know, he doesn't have any in escrow, then there might be an issue there that we need to have a conversation with. But it's something that we're looking at but have not implemented at this point.
When your agents are working with buyers, do you require them to use a buyer agency agreement?
No, that's actually been, it's highly recommended but not enforced. It's highly recommended, and most of our buyer's agents that are on our sales team for working these leads do use it. And you'll find that most of the time, the good agents do use it because, you know, once you get over the fear of saying, you know, this is just, you know, this has to be signed, it just becomes a standard part of your business, and it's just commonplace. And most of the good agents do use that buyer broker employment agreement.
Once your agent puts a buyer under contract, puts a contract together, does your company step in and help them to close that out with some kind of transaction management, or does the agent track it to close themselves?
Most of the agents nowadays track it to close themselves. We do have a licensed agent that does transaction management that can for a fee, you know, help them out in the paperwork and the process of handling that. But it's not mandatory for agents. It's there for the agents if they want to pay this other agent to handle that management. You know, it's kind of their call based on their workload.
Have you created any technology infrastructure for these agents to track that contract to close?
No, we haven't. You know, what we have done is more of the after it closes, you know, follow up with our CRM system where, you know, it'll have the anniversary date of when it closed. So, you know, whether it's, you know, 2014, well, Joe and Mary Smith is going to get an email from us on the exact date of their anniversary of their house purchase. So we do have systems like that in place for after the sale. We don't have anything at this point in place for during the sale. And being on some of the, I guess, the other side of companies that do have it, I don't know how effective it really is. I guess maybe more in today's market with the short sales and some of the bank-owned stuff that's going on, it would probably be more relevant than a traditional sale. I mean, if you don't know, you need to get the property disclosure out in 10 days or the insurance clue report back in 5 days from the sales contract. I mean, you really haven't done enough real estate deals to know what's going on. So it's something that it's interesting you bring that up, that I think we should look at a little bit more. But it goes back to trying to create something proprietary out there that could change in the future and just could be a lot of time and money spent on waiting for something else or some other leader to develop it and then implement it ourselves.
Brandon, you have a lot of balls in the air. You're doing a lot of different things. You must have some type of time management system. How do you keep control of your time?
Well, that's a good question. I work a lot of hours. Everything is synced as far as calendar-wise with my wife, my broker, my partner, my operating officer, and my fix-and-flip company. So we're sharing of calendars. So, you know, they know that, at 3 o'clock on Monday, I'm spending time with my wife and son. And they know if they need to schedule something for me, they can look and see that I have Wednesday afternoon open at 2 o'clock. So it's really, sharing some of this, using some of the online calendars and sharing it with who I do business with, that's really helped me manage my time effectively. And it also goes back to taking on the business that I can handle and looking at what is my greatest return on my time, because that's what it comes down to. How can I make the most amount of money from a business perspective with the time I have given in a day? And that's why a lot of my focus has been on the investment side, because, that's where the real money is being generated. I mean, the brokerage is a great thing. It's the great umbrella for the investment model. But it's an umbrella. It's the investment engine that drives everything. It's driving the transaction, and it's where the profitability is. And that's where the majority of my time is spent, because I know if I'm worrying about some of the little things in the brokerage, I'm missing out on the real revenue creation.
You mentioned an online calendar. Is there a program that you're using?
Yeah, we use Google for a lot of our stuff, from our email system to our online calendars to our online documents, Google Docs, to our company intranet, where we can share disclosure statements and different things that agents might need if they need a book. We have a video recording studio at the office. If an agent needs to schedule time to use that studio, they can go on our intranet, which is powered by Google, and they can just reserve a time on the calendar for that. So we use Google a lot, and you can't beat the price of free for a lot of Google stuff.
You mentioned you work a lot of hours in a week. How many hours do you work in a typical week?
I'd say I probably now put in 60 to 70 hours a week, and that's probably down from 80 back in 2009, 2000, early 2010. I was probably putting in 80 hours a week. So I'm putting in a lot of time and effort. I mean, when you're running an investment strategy and you're trying to find a deal that could potentially net you, $40,000, $50,000, it's hard to take a night off of really scrubbing the auction list or really putting in the amount of time necessary to find the deal, because if you take a night off, that could be a $50,000 night you just took off.
Do you try to take off a certain day during the week, or do you just work 7 days a week?
No, I take off weekends. So I really crush it pretty hard during the week. I'll work, from, let's say, 7 in the morning to to 5 o'clock, take off between 5 and 7 with the family and dinner and stuff, and then do a 7 to 10 to 11 maybe, and, repeat. And some weekends I do work, of course, but I try to at least have one day I'm fully off. And then, on Sunday, obviously, I have to work at night on Sunday night. But for the most part, my weekends are pretty flexible.
They spend that time with your wife and child.
Exactly. I mean, you got to have some work-life balance. And, it's not to say if I don't want to go golfing, I don't make time to go golfing. Or if I don't want to take my wife and kid on a walk in the morning or go do whatever with them, I don't have that flexibility to do it. That to me is more important than the money being made. I mean, the money's great, but it's the freedom. It's the freedom that should get everyone excited about this business, because the money, it allows for that freedom to go do those kind of things. And, like I said, you got to make the hay while the sun's shining. And, if I put in the time and effort and I practice delayed gratification of what I'm sowing here, life will be a lot easier down the road.
Let's talk about business plan for a minute. Do you have a business plan?
Of course.
How often do you look at that business plan?
Well, I have a business plan for the investment company as well as the real estate brokerage. We have corporate meetings with our admin staff once a month, where we'll go through and we'll look at the business plan and see if anything needs to be tweaked. And we'll outline where we need to be going. I mean, it's looking at, finance, operations, strategy and development, and marketing. I mean, that's what we really need to focus on, of, what we're doing in those core areas. Because if you've got a plan for success. You just don't wake up and it just happens. You've got to have a game plan to see it through. And without having a business plan, I find it hard how people can be really successful.
You say you make revisions on it monthly. Do you have one large session that you do once a year or once every 6 months? Or is it just that you keep modifying it a little bit as you go?
Yeah, we keep modifying our business plan as we go. Because, there's one thing constant in this business is change. I mean, and you've got to be constantly tweaking where you're going and what opportunities are available. It's a constant tweak. I mean, we just don't wait and say it's January 1st. It's a new year. We got a plan. It doesn't happen that day. January 1st is not a reset day like everyone thinks it is. It's just another day.
And you're probably working that day.
Yeah, exactly. If I'm not working, it could be a $50,000 day.
Let's talk about motivation, goals, and your mental game. What drives you? What drives Brandon?
That's a good question. For sure, my family. I mean, creating a better life for my family is, I think, what everyone strives for. And having that freedom to do what you want to do when you want to do it. That's what drives me. And money is just the byproduct of enjoying what I'm doing. I would admit I love what I do. I mean, it is so much fun to find these houses, search them out, rehab them, help the community, build stabilization in the market, and make some money in return. I mean, and also I look at, how many people am I helping employ out there? How many contractors have a job because of what I'm doing? How many products and materials am I buying that's helping put food on someone's table? I mean, so money's just a byproduct of doing what you love and doing it well and having a game plan. So what motivates me is my family and having a better life and an easier life for me down the road and just enjoying every day what I do.
Did you say that you have or have not purchased some properties for long-term hold, your personal wealth?
Yes, I have one buy and hold project that I have purchased. It was a 24-unit apartment complex. I bought it, I believe it was May of 2010. Right at that time, a lot of prices that trustees sell are getting out of control as far as a lot of influx of buyers, or investors, knowing what margins were being made, and that was right before the tax credit ended. And I kind of wanted to decelerate on the gas pedal and saying, after this tax credit goes away, we're just bumping buyers up in their decision making process to get this tax credit. After that goes away, I don't want to be stuck holding a bunch of inventory when there's not a demand for it. So I really backed up on the flipping part of the business and said, it's time to do a long-term hold project. And an apartment complex came up at trustee sale, 24 unit, and I bought it for $20,000 a door. So $20,000 a door, I bought it for $480,000, and I put $160,000 in it. And right now we have it over 90% occupied. We're doing cash out financing on it, so I'm going to get $500,000 out of it, and only be stuck with probably $130,000 or $140,000 of equity I have in it. And it has, it's a great investment. It's probably valued at $800,000 to $850,000 right now. So, it's a pretty good long-term hold, and it's a great retirement strategy for me.
That's great, and it's positive cash flowing each month.
Oh, it's ripping out cash flow very nicely.
Are you trying to focus on the future? Are you investing in retirement plans, IRAs, SEPs? Are you doing anything along those lines?
Oh, of course. SEP IRA is big for me. Obviously, you don't like working. Unfortunately, one of the things about the fix and flip business is it's treated as short-term income, ordinary income. So I'm getting hit pretty hard tax-wise. There's no long-term capital gains that I can get from doing what I do. So, about half the year I'm working for the government. So I've got to take advantage of some tax shelters out there, and a SEP IRA is one of those things that I'm doing too. I think you can max it out about $49,000 annually in tax savings. So that's the big one that I do. And again, getting into more of the buy and hold strategy is going to be a way to kind of hedge that of buying properties and treating them as long-term investments and doing exchanges or cashing out in 5 to 7 years with them. So, but the main thing for me, what I've incorporated right now, is the SEP IRA.
And have you thought at all about using any of those funds in a self-directed IRA to buy more real estate?
Yeah, I have. However, I do want to diversify my portfolio a lot. I have the apartment complex right now. I have, a long-term buy and hold strategy I'm getting ready to implement with 15 to 18 homes based on the commitment I have from a local community bank. So there's almost only so much so many eggs I can put in that real estate basket, which I believe I want to, put a lot in that basket right now, because the way I believe prices are, the way cash flow is right now, the way inflation looks like it might be on the horizon. I mean, so there's a lot of eggs in that real estate basket. But as far as my SEP IRA, I'm thinking it's going to behoove me to keep that in more stocks and keep that out of real estate.
If you were to advise a brand new agent in the business, what would you tell them to do first?
Look for a niche. Look for a niche in your market. There's always opportunity out there. There's, when one door shuts, there's always another one that opens. So, look for the need in the market and look for a way you can penetrate. The best people out there and entrepreneurs that make it happen are problem solvers. They look for a problem and they solve it. I mean, I think that's the best advice I can give to anyone looking to start out there is, look to solve a problem. And also look at the ways that you can generate the best revenue and the best return on investment for the time spent doing it. I know a lot of people that handle a lot of REO business, but the profitability and the margins off that is not very good. When you can do, essentially what I'm doing and make a huge rip off of it as opposed to dealing with REOs or dealing with short sales. It's really, you know, look at the return on investment when you're trying to problem solve. You know, maximize that time.
Brandon, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you would like to talk about?
Oh, I believe we covered most of it. And, you know, I think you when you asked me, you know, how people can really learn from this, it's by doing. It's by taking this and getting rolling the sleeves up and actually doing it. Because I you know, I get approached from real estate agents a lot, you know, wanting to know what the special sauce is. And the special sauce is hard work. Just you know, that's it. Put in the time and effort. You know, when I got started, you know, I'm still working 60, 70 hours a week. You know, put in that time and effort. And I'm an open book. You come to me, you want to know how I do something, I'll tell you. I love to see people make money and better themselves in their situation. But it requires you to roll up the sleeves and really work those hours. And if you want to make it happen, you have to have that dedication because no one else is going to do it for you.
Well, Brandon, you've rolled up your sleeves and you've shown your entrepreneurial spirit. Your ability to identify what the market wants and provide it at a profit is admirable. Your keen eye for opportunity, your strong work ethic, and your straightforward honesty are certainly keys to your success. Your past is admirable. Your future is bright. Thank you again for being our Rising Agent of the Month.
You've been listening to the Mastermind Agent Interview of the Month Club, where top agents, rising agents, team members, and guests from across North America reveal their success secrets, strategies, and systems in up-close and personal interviews. You can find all the club interviews at www.mastermindagent.com.